This Augusta Golf Show podcast is brought to you by Gerald Jones Audi. Inspire design, where emotion takes shape. 4022 Washington Road in Martinez.
At some point in our lives, we've all done things to fit in. But then we realize the importance of being ourselves. Introducing the distinct Audi Q5, an SUV all its own. Its LED DRLs stand out wherever they shine. And with Audi Quattro all-wheel drive and available Audi Drive Select, it delivers performance that no one can imitate. So be yourself. Visit your Audi dealer to test drive the distinct Audi Q5.
I'm David Jones. Come see the largest selection ever of Audi A3s, Q5s, and Q7s. Audi Exceptional Luxury Performance at Gerald Jones Audi, 4022 Washington Road in Martinez, or visit us on the web at GeraldJonesAudi.com.
Well, Peter Kessler is a golf historian, voice of the game. You've seen him on the Golf Channel. You've heard him on the PGA Tour Network on Sirius XM Radio. He joins us after major championships. Always a pleasure to welcome Peter Kessler back to the Augusta Golf Show. Hi, Peter.
I'm delighted to be with you, Johnny. You well?
I'm good. Everything's good with you?
Not too bad. Working on some stuff. All right. I can pull a couple of things together. I'll have even more fun.
Good. I like hearing that. I understand this might be in the weeds, and I may be the only one that thinks about this or cares about this. And the golf on Sunday at the PGA was riveting, but I'm trying to figure out. You're going to hold your premier championship. It's the 100th anniversary of this thing. How does the PGA of America settle on Belrive Country Club?
Well, I mean, there's an undercurrent in our industry as it relates to the PGA and how it selects its golf courses. And while I don't know this for 100%, I hear it so often that I feel like there must be some validity to it, which is that for a very long time, ever since the PGA of America realized they could make money on the Ryder Cup, and then by selling merchandise and commercial space during the PGA Championship, that they could really line their coffers. And there's been a number of suggestions that the number of guys who have gone through the PGA of America hierarchy have formed a sort of an old boys club. I mean, you look at holding it at Kiawa, for example, which they just did recently, and they'll do it again. Kiawa is like driving into your garage from your driveway. There's just enough room for a car on the right, and there's just enough room for a car on the left. And it took 6 and 7 hours for people to be able to leave Kiawa the last time it went around, as opposed to the 5 minutes that it should take. It's some kind of a money grab. There's no way that you go back to golf courses that can't handle the infrastructure of a championship unless there's a monetary angle to it. And the guy who owns Kiawa, for example, is absolutely in the middle of incestuous relationships with the PGA. That's half of what goes on here. You know, you look at the next 10 years, what they've done is they've said, okay, we'll go to 5 legit golf courses, but we'll go to 5, let's split the cash golf courses. You know, they didn't give rights overseas for people to see this because people wouldn't pay them enough money to make the profit that they had in mind. That's not good for the game, and that's certainly for the organization that says let's grow the game is not growing the game. But there is a money grab, and there are incestuous relationships in play. That's why there's 3 buses for 10,000 people. That's why there's no bathrooms. They don't spend a dime on infrastructure or the people, and it's an annual cash grab. And now it'll be every other year, so it won't look like what it is. And I'm sad to say it, but the evidence is long-term, and it's overwhelming.
Yeah. I felt good for the people in St. Louis who never get to see that kind of golf, and they seem to turn out in droves, but turning out in droves sometime is not the best thing.
Well, you've got 2 issues with the crowds at the PGA Championship. The first one is that they do a thing now that they call supergroups, where they put 3 great players in a group on Thursday and Friday. The problem with that is then you only have 4 supergroups, so you have 12 attractive players to watch. But now they're not spread around the golf course. They're in 3 or 4 groups. So it's like going to the Ryder Cup. All of the action takes place on 3 or 4 holes, and they move this feast around the golf course until it completes. So what happens is all of the people at the golf tournament are divided into groups of 25%, and each of them follow a super group on Thursday and Friday, unless it's your nephew and son in another group and you follow them. Literally, no one else gets followed. So what happens is you've got a heat index of 110, but if you follow a super group on Thursday and Friday, the heat index is closer to 120 because the crowds are 20 and 30 deep, and you literally never get to see a shot. And then, of course, on the weekends, people have picked up on it by then. People who go to Thursday and Fridays of these championships that the PGA holds never, ever, ever would consider going back again, no matter what, for the rest of their life, because the experience is so horrible. So that's what happens on Thursday and Friday. And then, of course, you had a really good situation on the end of the weekend where all of the best players in the field who remained were all stacked near the top. So again, you had the super group thing, but in that case, you have to live with it because you want the best players playing the best players coming down the stretch on Sunday afternoon. So it's a very tough watch, and they relied on supplies, and they relied on ice, and they relied on water, and they relied on restrooms, and they relied on shuttles, and they were long on two-hour waits to get onto your bus. So it's a very difficult viewing experience, but quite right. They turned out like I haven't seen crowds in towns like that in a long, long time. I mean, when Tiger crossed the bridge to go to the scoring trailer and he waved to the thousands of people below, I thought it was a very touching moment because it's something that Tiger historically has not done. But he stood there and he waved to them and he acknowledged them, and I thought that was wonderful. And I thought the incredible number of people who stood there to just watch him cross that bridge shows you how much people really do love golf and how much they really will put up with to be able to just catch a glimpse of their heroes.
We're talking with Peter Kessler here on the Augusta Golf Show. Let's talk a little golf. Brooks Koepka, three major championships, your winner, three major championships and one other PGA Tour win. At this point in his career, Peter, can you compare him with any other historic figure in the game?
Yeah, it's almost like Bobby Jones in a funny way. You know, Jones didn't play professional tournaments except for the U.S. Open and the Open Championship, and of course those count. If you look back at the record book and you put everything in that's supposed to be in and you have them updated, then Jones won seven major professional championships, which count as tour wins. And he also won the very first event, the second event that he played in, a professional tune-up tournament in 1930. So he has seven majors and then one other. Now, of course, Jones didn't play the PGA Tour, and so it's slightly misleading, but it's a rare example of somebody who has more major championships than tour wins that count against that tour. But no, it's really unheard of. Obviously, Andy North won two U.S. Opens and another tournament. I believe it was Milwaukee. But I don't think that Brooks is going to fade like Andy North ultimately did. And that's what you don't know. I mean, you look back at Padraig Harrington 10 years ago, and he won three majors. Tiger was away for some of that. But then it was over. So here he became what everybody's calling Brooks right this minute, the most dominant player in the game. But he only did it for 15 minutes, and then he never did it again. And like a lot of players before him who won majors, he tried to get better, and of course he got worse. And so in the case of Brooks, you've got somebody who's been playing phenomenal golf for 14 months, but it's largely taken place in a handful of tournaments, three of which were the ones that you want to close, which he was able to do, and looked like it was absolutely without strain. So in the near term, yes, he becomes our most dominant player in the near term, because 2 weeks ago, Dustin Johnson was our most dominant player. And, of course, a year ago, Jordan Spieth was our most dominant player. And then Justin Thomas was the most dominant player. And then for 15 minutes, Jason Day was. So it's like, give it a minute, everybody. Let the thing play out. So, everybody said, now he's Hall of Fame. Now he's dominant. Okay, he's having a great run. This stuff like this doesn't happen very often. Love to see him keep it going. Love to get some long-term context to what he's doing. Don't want to hear about the World Golf Hall of Fame. He's not eligible for another 22 years. Could we just wait 5 minutes before we, you know, give you the specific details of his acceptance speech? So everybody's in such a rush to pick the winner. Everybody's in such a rush to characterize the state of things when it's something that's ongoing. You know, you let the thing play out. But his golf was magnificent, and only two people this summer didn't wilt at the presence of Tiger Woods on a leaderboard on Sunday at the Open and the PGA, and that was Molinari, with who he played at the Open Championship, who watched Tiger go double single and took confidence from that and ran with it at that point. He had been even par to that point. Then he started to move himself under par. And Brooks Koepka is the only guy who remained as Tiger shot up the leaderboard at the PGA. And, you know, the suggestion that he's not Tiger anymore and he doesn't have the it factor anymore is complete nonsense. I mean, at the Open Championship, as soon as he made his move, Jordan Spieth was unable to think, and Kisner was unable to play, and somebody else was at 9 and their game, you know, went away in 15 seconds. So it's totally still there, and some of these guys admitted it. So what Koepka did, I thought, was wonderful. Obviously, he sure isn't the kind of fellow interpersonally that you want as your best player if he's going to be that for a time, because he doesn't care what we think. He doesn't really have anything to say to the media. He doesn't really have anything to say to people like you, and that's bad for the game. I get the whole aloof thing, and I'm an athlete, and I'm not a golfer. Okay, that's all very fascinating. You have a responsibility to give back to the game. Jack Nicklaus gave back to the game. In the early days, Tiger did, and now he's doing it again. You can't just be somebody who takes the trophy and disappears. It's not good for the game. Responsibilities come with being the best at what you do, and he needs to live up to those responsibilities, or he's going to be really a hated figure in golf if he continues to not show us anything of himself. And I'm guessing there's a lot of good to show us.
He is Peter Kessler. I'm glad you decided you could talk to me. He is Peter Kessler. Peter, thank you for taking the time to do this. I appreciate it as always, my friend.
Oh, I'm always so glad to be with you. And boy, you know, the longer we work together, the more I realize that you have this technique that you're very good at. I always feel like you just give me a little flick with the tip of your index finger, and you just know exactly how to send me off and running. So it's so much fun. Thank you, John.